How would you know if someone you love or if yourself is at risk of leaving the Christian faith? Well, we look at five early warning signs of apostasy on this episode of Unapologetic with Dr. Bobby Conway, the 1 Minute Apologist. I'm your host, Tim Hall. Well, Bobby, there has been this growing trend, particularly in America, of people leaving the church, of apostatization, if you will. And we see that kind of bearing itself out in the numbers. I found a Pew study that says in 2018 and 2019, there was a phone survey, and the Americans that they surveyed was down 65% of Americans say that they're Christian, and that's down 12 points in the last decade. So this is definitely something that the church as a whole needs to address, and something that we wanted to talk about. Some of those early warning signs, things that are going on in our lives or in our environments that might lead to people eventually losing their faith. Now, that doesn't mean that as we talk about this, as the things that we describe means it's a foregone conclusion, but just that people should be kind of aware of what's going on. Do you care to comment on that 12% decrease in the last decade or so number?
Well, it's not surprising at all. I mean, there's obviously a massive culture shift taking place on a number of levels. We are seeing many in our baby boomer generation who are beginning to die off. We have millennials emerging. And so we're seeing that this is changing up kind of the belief climate of our American landscape. And subsequently, it's producing a different set of beliefs that's going to require us as a church to know how to tackle and to deal with.
No, that's good. I think one of the first things that we kind of just need to address is the difference between kind of deconversion and maybe disaffiliation. I think one of the things that we've seen a lot over the last year and a half has been a little bit of this disaffiliation. So maybe you can just kind of illuminate how you would see the difference between those two categories of people.
Well, the deconversion or the disaffiliated, these are two different ways of describing people and their stance as it relates toward the church. So those who are destabilizing, these are people who are removing themselves from the church, but they might still want to hold on to their beliefs as Christians. Those who are deconstructing are removing themselves from the church and also becoming full-born apostates. So on the one hand, you have people leaving the church and holding on to Jesus, and those are those who are kind of destabilizing. And then you have the deconstructionists, and they are the ones who are leaving the church and leaving Jesus, and as a result, they would fit the category of an apostate.
Yeah, so that's a good distinction. So we're going to kind of just give a brief overview of kind of five areas to be aware of or concerned about if you fit into one of these categories that, you know, there's a higher chance that you might, you know, apostate, that you might start to really question your faith and end up leaving the church, being one of those deconstructing or deconverts that we're talking about. And again, we just want to stress that it's not something that if you fall into one of these categories, you're like, oh, that's it, I'm out. But hopefully we can try to give you some warning signs that you can be aware of what's going on and help kind of work against some of that. And just maybe that realization helps you say, okay, I just need to be aware of some of these. So Bobby, the first one that we're going to talk about is when Christians find themselves in the Christian circle or their churches that discourage questions. So if you're in this environment where you feel like you're asking questions and those are being discouraged, and you're telling you, people are saying, don't ask those type of questions, that might be an early warning sign that those people are going to end up leaving. Why do you think that, A, why do you think sometimes churches discourage questions? And then the second question, I think, following up to that would be, why do you think that that might lead to people leaving the church or deconverting completely?
Well, people have questions And they want answers to those questions, and that's understandable. I think that on one side, you have the church, and they have a responsibility, those especially called to lead in the role of a pastor, to be equipped to give answers to their flock, to the sheep that have questions. And so we should not be making people feel bad for asking questions. Rather, we should celebrate the fact that they would feel comfortable enough to trust us with their questions. For example, I woke up this morning and had a question from a lady that goes to our church. She wanted to know what the applicability was of the Old Testament as it relates to stoning those who have experienced or were a part of sorcery in the Old Testament. How does that relate to today? Now, I could have just said, you know, you shouldn't ask this question. It doesn't really matter. Or, you know what, God knows the best thing here. No, I took time and I gave a thoughtful response to her to help her to understand how we are to reconcile some of these difficult passages like stoning in the Old Testament to today. And so one of the things that we need to do as pastors is we need to continue to equip ourselves. We need to be aware of the questions that people are asking. We need to create a culture that says it's okay to bring your questions. We need people to be in the know that you're in the kind of congregation that it's safe for you to ask your questions. You are welcome to bring them to us. In fact, we can talk about different questions that are going on in the culture. Like imagine on Sunday mornings, if you just took kind of a 5-minute apologetic moment and you just said, you know, here's questions that kind of come up against Christianity, and you tackle maybe a question and give a good biblical answer, you're sort of creating the DNA. Now, when you do that, I think people are going to be much more inclined to stick around and stay engaged in a church. If you don't do that, number one, you might minimize their question, or you might come across threatened. You might come off angry. It could be because you're not equipped as a pastor, but all of these things are going to shake people's confidence in not only you as a pastor, but in the Word of God. And so they will be tempted to pull away, and hopefully they'll find a church that is ready to deal with their questions. And this is huge today, Tim. Churches are going to have to figure out a way to start engaging on this apologetic stuff. There's too many people that want to minimize apologetics. And what I want to say is this is going to get worse. That 12% mark is going to get much worse if pastors don't get in the game of equipping their flocks to defend the faith.
Yeah, there's a well-known kind of progressive Christian pastor named Brandon Robertson, and he kind of said something else, something similar, where he just wasn't allowed to ask questions. And I thought that was strange, because when I heard that, I said, man, the church environments that I've been in, they may be atypical, but I was allowed to ask questions. I was allowed to, you know, doubt in some sense. And you know, you're another example of that. I mean, heck, you've gone through your own bout of doubt several times that we've talked about. Maybe we'll get into that a bit more. But I've always felt like the Christian circles that I've been in have allowed me to ask questions. So maybe go a little bit deeper for our audience on why you think not being allowed to ask questions could open the door for somebody leaving Christianity altogether.
Well, that's something that we should be aware of, those of us who are pastors of flocks, that when people bring a question to us, this is something that we are to be stewards of their intellectual questions that are vexing them. For example, Steve Jobs, it is known that he died as a Zen Buddhist, but he went to church a few times as a youngster, and on one occasion, he went to church, and he held up a cover of an issue on a magazine with hungry people from Africa, and he asked his pastor, does God know everything? Yes. Well, does God know about this? And the pastor said, yes, Steve, but I know you don't understand. Well, that was his last time going to a church. The pastor just minimized Steve Jobs' question about the suffering of people in other cultures like Africa, in Biafra in particular, where this Life magazine article rooted in that Steve Jobs held up, the pastor wasn't able to give an answer, or he didn't care enough to try to give an answer, and Jobs left. And what was his conclusion? He didn't just destabilize, he completely deconstructed in his faith. So I think one of the dire warnings for us to be aware of is when people are coming to us asking us questions about those starving in other parts of the world, or whether or not the Bible is trustworthy, or what about those who've never heard of Jesus, and other difficult questions. We need to realize that that could be a future Steve Jobs. It could leave Christianity and go away and die as a Buddhist. And that's why it's so important for us to recognize our high call as equipping people as pastors.
You know, I think that example of Steve Jobs is an excellent example. And one of the things that you lay out in the beginning of Doubting Towards Faith, that story in a bit more detail and kind of where it leads. So excellent work. I do want to say before we get to our second one, Bobby mentioned a question that somebody asked about stoning. That's going to be on an upcoming episode that we are going to address the idea of stoning. So you're going to want to make sure that you stay tuned for our next episode of the Unapologetic Show. The second, kind of warning sign that's largely cultural is that you're in a culture of legalism, and legalism can be defined in several ways, but one of them is that there's an expectation that you're kind of living an exact certain way, and if you fall outside of that on any side, that you're, you know, seen as terrible, awful, you're a, you know, extreme sinner, and you're just kind of ostracized. Bobby, I'm sure that in your life you've experienced people that have come out of, or maybe even you yourself have experienced environments that are very legalistic. Why do you think that legalism, that churches tend to fall into legalism in the first place? What do you think is the driving factor towards a culture being legalistic?
Early on, I think a legalistic culture can make sense to like a new believer. So for example, when I got saved, Tim, I didn't know anything about Christianity. I went to Bible college to learn stuff, and I happened to be at a very legalistic Bible college. And so I found that as I was living in Conway, Arkansas, you know, after moving from Southern California, I was in a dry culture without alcohol. This was great. I'm a recovering alcoholic, so that felt great. And then, you know, the legalism kind of had all the right rules. And I was this kid that was totally adverse against boundaries and rules. And so as a new believer, those actually felt like a blanket of security to me for a little while. Like, okay, I just got to come up with my list of do's and don'ts. The problem is you'll outgrow that list of do's and don'ts in times. And we need something bigger than legalism to sustain us, much bigger. And so I think that while it might work for a season, like for example, a legalistic church that expects everybody to sign off on the 25 core doctrines of their church, you know, reading only from the KJV, believing only in a pre-trib, believing only in a young earth, wearing only this, and so on and so forth. Well, you kind of lay that out. Well, that might be comfortable for somebody at first because they don't even know what questions to ask. They don't even know how to interact with this stuff. But as they start growing and thinking, all of a sudden they'll start thinking, man, this feels a little bit forced. And so I think that is the danger, is legalism saps life, and it causes us to focus our attention and energy on things outside of the gospel. And we start arguing about ancillary issues. And so I think it's important that we keep the gospel the main thing. I've said many times, Jesus died on one hill, yet we are often willing to die on many hills in the name of our pet particularities. And so I think one of the things I've loved about being a non-denominational pastor, Tim, is we've got many people from different denominational backgrounds, and we can learn from them. And I think the danger is I'm not trying to defend any particular denomination. We're trying to defend scriptures, and we're trying to look at the Word of God. And I think that Jesus nailed it, right? Love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself, right? I think that's kind of our focus. We talk about at Image Church, love God, love people, celebrate the gospel. I think if we can do that, then we can give lots of freedom and grace for people to swim in our church camp, so to speak.
Yeah, one of the things that I love as a parenting style that I'm adopting now that you've mentioned before several times is just how you wanted to push back against this idea of legalism, particularly with your kids. And maybe you could, you know, give the audience this great piece of advice one more time. How did you address your kids when they came to you and they had, you know, again, a theological question, which again, that goes back, you had a great opportunity for your kids to continue to ask questions, but to ward against this idea of legalism, what did you advise them when they came to you with a theological question?
Yeah. Interestingly enough, Tim, I wasn't eager to get them to fit into my theological box. I definitely understood the importance of them believing that Jesus died on the cross for sins and rose from the grave, and that they're to place their faith and trust in him. I wanted them to love God, love people, and then celebrate that gospel message that I just shared. One of the things that I would tell them is I tried hard to say, listen, do not commit to theological positions too quick. Your dad could tell you position A, position B, position C, and then you could commit to position A, B, and C. But the problem is if you commit to positions theologically prematurely, you might be getting set up for a future bout with doubt down the road when you go and read an alternative position that challenges your belief that you adopted. So I told them, I said, love God, love people, celebrate the gospel. I said, love learning. And I said, enjoy learning about the different positions. And guess what? There are different positions. So instead of just teaching them the one position, then later down the road, they get shocked learning about the other positions and end up in a crisis of faith. I wanted them to know there's all kinds of positions. And what else would you expect in a world with a bunch of people? Take your time. Learning those positions and then commit to a position. That way, they're not set up to be panicky when they go off to college and they start hearing about all these different views. And so I tried to just let them know, like, hey, there's different views as it relates to how old the age of the earth is. There's different views on the timing of Christ's return. There's different views that people have as it relates to how God saved us. And I let them know that. And I just comfortably held my hands open, and I look at my kids and I'm going, thank God they have not fallen into legalism, and neither have they fallen into licentiousness. And they're not freaking out if they hear about different, contentions that come against the faith. And guess what? They're loving God, loving people, and they wholeheartedly believe in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus.
Yeah, that's great. Again, that's been a wonderful model for raising my kids. I have a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old, and it's oftentimes that, you know, my wife will be working on bedtime with the kids, and they'll be, you know, reading their nightly devotions, and, I get a call from upstairs, hey, Dad, we got a question for you, and they come up, and I try to do that same thing, like, hey, we could answer it like this, we could answer it like this, asking them a lot of questions, how do you think you'd answer it? Like, my 10-year-old enjoys listening to scripture, so sometimes they'll say, what about this or what about that? And it's just fantastic. So that's great. And I want the audience to notice that sometimes the first warning sign can lead into the second warning sign. As Bobby mentioned earlier, if you have that very strict doctrinal set of beliefs and you start asking questions kind of outside of that, or why do we believe some of these things, you might get that tamping down. We don't ask those questions. Don't ask why these are our beliefs. Just go with it, right? Sign the paper and move on. And I think that often leads to our third one. And so this third category, this third warning sign, if you will, is an isolationist perspective. If you're in a church culture or you're in a Christian circle that is very isolationist, that is, all things in the outside world are bad. No R-rated movies, you know, don't read any kind of books that aren't Christian books or are by Christian authors or even by a certain set of Christian authors that fall within, again, their legalistic, maybe orthodoxy position. That would be another sign that could lead to somebody leaving the church and deconverting. Bobby, paint a little bit more of a picture for us why that could lead to somebody losing their Christian faith, that isolationist perspective.
Sure, Tim. I would say briefly, this is dangerous on all fronts. Number one, because it puts you in a silo and it causes you to get a sense of superiority over others. And that's why I think even if somebody's a denominational person, that's okay. But don't get this superiority complex about your denomination so much so that you don't think you can learn from other people. It's very dangerous when we seclude ourselves and we quarantine ourselves from the world. We need to not only interact with other denominational leaders and other Christians, but we also need to interact with the world that we're trying to reach, that we're living in. So I think that all of that can help us to listen better, to be more empathetic, and to be more humble in our approach to gospel ministry.
Well, we got about 4 minutes left to cover these last two. So the next warning sign is significant stress in one's life. So Bobby, I know that you've experienced this and that, you know, kind of led to some of your doubt. Explain to our audience why stress can be a trigger for doubt and for leaving Christianity, and maybe how to ward against that. And then we'll maybe talk about our last one, which is, again, a trigger event, something other than stress that can lead to that. So stress, why might that lead to deconversion?
I mean, listen, when we're really stressed, and there's a number of things that can lead to our stress, you know, we're in a position in life where we're not really experiencing lots of rest. Stress doesn't produce peace in our life. And so what is God? Well, he's a God of peace. And so when we're stressed out, we're not sensing God's peace. And, you know, we're looking for anything to anesthetize our stress. And sometimes God doesn't seem to come to our balming aid as quick as we might like him to. I think that, you know, different things can cause our stress, like, you know, walking in immorality. And so we can feel guilt and we're trying to cover up our guilt. And so what we start doing is we start compromising the moral law and we start trying to minimize maybe the sin that we committed, saying that wasn't that big of a deal. And so we start looking at the Bible and maybe we're engaged in all kinds of sexual sin. And then what do we start doing? We start having doubts about the Bible because we don't like the way the guilt feels. So we start questioning whether it got it right on the idea of sexual morality and sexual ethics. So we start compromising little by little. We start destabilizing, and some will even, you know, deconvert all the way and end up becoming full on deconstructionists.
Yeah, I love that line that you said right at the beginning of that, where you said stress robs us of our rest. And man, it's so important to rest. And when you're not, when you're just going and going and going, man, you can get really worn out. So
right?
The last warning sign would be a significant trigger event. And this is something maybe just beyond stress. It could be stressful, but it's something beyond stress where it may be the loss of a loved one, the loss of a job. It could be a global pandemic. It could be an extreme financial burden that kind of comes up, and your theology, what you understand, your Christian worldview doesn't know how to deal with this certain trigger. So Bobby, what might be some of those other examples? And then we'll ask the same question. How do you think that leads to deconversion?
Yeah, well, I do think that there are certain instances in life that we can experience a set of circumstances that are so overwhelming that we wonder, God, where are you? It brings about doubt in our faith. I can remember when I was doing world travel and I was in the 1040 window of Northern India thinking, boy, are all these people just going to perish because they've never heard about Jesus? And it created these questions in me, right? Or you meet really friendly, you know, LGBTQ people, and there's lots of friendly LGBTQ people, and you start thinking, well, they're so friendly, they're so sincere. I mean, surely, you know, God would understand that they just want to have love too for one another, and you start having these types of thoughts and questions. And the danger is to let our feelings guide this whole process. We have to go back to the Word, we have to trust the Word, and we have to think through this. And so we have to come up with a biblical worldview. So I feel like if I have more time, I could talk about how I dealt with that tension in India, or how I learned to recognize how I could hold my stance while still recognizing the LGBTQ people. Yeah, of course, they're very kind and very sweet, but that doesn't mean that we need to bend what the Bible has to say because of that. There can be lots of nice people doing all kinds of wrong things. It doesn't make what they're doing right because people are nice or because they're friendly or because they're sincere. So all that to say, Tim, As Christians, we just have to step back and realize that there are certain things that can literally shatter our faith if we're not careful, but there's nothing that will ultimately shatter it if we really trust God and walk with Him through it. The loss of a loved one, yes, an addiction, guilt, whatever it might be, God is faithful and He can help us get through our difficulties with Him.
Amen. Well, there is so much more we could say, but we're about out of time on this episode of Unapologetic. We hope that you join us next time as we continue to defend truth without compromise. You've been listening to Unapologetic with Dr. Bobby Conway, the One-Minute Apologist. I am your host, Tim Hall. Be sure to listen to Bobby on Pastor's Perspective Monday through Thursday, as well as like, share, and subscribe to the One-Minute Apologist YouTube channel, where we have over 1,000 videos. We would also like to remind you that this is a listener-supported program. We would greatly appreciate your support in any amount so we could continue to provide this ministry. If you would like to be a part of our team in any capacity, please visit our website at oneminuteapologist.com. And while you're there, check out all of Bobby's books, courses, and even invite him to speak at your church or event. Thank you for listening to Unapologetic, where we defend truth without compromise. This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.